Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay.
My name is Mike Jokum. Jess and Matt are joining me, and it is just us this week as we go through the last couple weeks of news. Guys, how you doing?
Solid.
Fantastic.
Great. So plenty of news to go over, from Mary Holman George's passing to McLaren, again, Marcus Ericsson, et cetera, et cetera. Plenty of stuff to go over. So tune in. It should be a news-filled episode. And with that, I will turn it over to Matt, who's going to lead the topics tonight.
Yeah, and I think something that the three of us just kind of want to say to all the fans at home is we do really appreciate everybody tuning in and listening to us. Viewership has been really good lately, and for those who don't know, we do have social media presence at Pit Lane Parlay, P-A-R-L-E-Y, on Twitter. We really do appreciate you guys listening in. I know Mike and Jess, they put in a lot of work to this, and we try to do our best to make a good product for you guys, so we really appreciate you guys listening in to us. Pretty much a couple weeks of interviews. So now, yeah, like Mike said, a lot of news to get through. The first, obviously, on a kind of a somber note, was the passing of Mary Holman George. I believe that was on Saturday at the age of 83. She was the chairman of the board emeritus of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. A lot of good tributes coming out on social media for her. I think my favorite that I saw was the story about Willie T. Ribbs. I don't think I have ever heard of that story where she really tried to break the color barrier at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and get Willie T out there and even field a sprint car for him on like a separate deal. So obviously sad passing. We are thinking about their whole family and the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Jess, do you have any thoughts on that?
Just coming from the Indianapolis area, it's very sad to me. She did a lot for the community there, not just in the motorsports, but also with Greyhound Rescue and a lot of other things. So Indy is going to be a much sadder place without her, and thoughts and prayers with her family.
Yeah, very, very well said. I don't think there's much to add on to that one. Hope her family's doing okay. And yeah, we're all thinking of them.
And I think that makes Tony next in line, correct?
Uh-oh. Yes, it does.
Okay. I'm a little fuzzy on the family tree there. But yeah, so that was probably the saddest piece of news that came out over the last couple of weeks. And it's something that happened before we recorded last week, so we couldn't touch on it. But kind of the next biggest, I tried to do my best to kind of list these topics in order of, I would say, quote unquote, importance. And the next one that came out was a little update as far as Robert Wickens goes, as far as some of his social media posts. He posted that he was paralyzed from the waist down after one of his videos where he had leg movement, and a lot of people were starting to get very happy and think positive thoughts, which is always good. But then he clarified, you know, that there's still a lot of work to be done, and that he's trying to strengthen the nerves in his legs to regain function. Mike, what did you think of kind of the back and forth that we saw from Wickens and his fiance Carly, as far as posting something and then kind of clarifying and then kind of re-clarifying what they were trying to pass along to the masses?
Yeah, I'm glad, you know, that they've been so transparent through this, you know, process for the most part. But I'm also glad they clarified it. I think they had to clarify it, especially because that ESPN.com article, you know, said Wickens is paralyzed, never to walk again, blah, blah, blah. And Wickens was like, hey, hold on, guys. You know, I'm not, you know, giving up without a fight here. So, you know, it sucks but you know, at the same time, the fact that, you know, there's still a chance, and we know he's going to work harder than ever. You know, we're all pulling for him, and any, you know, strain of hope we can hold on to, we'll hold on to.
Jess?
Yeah, I am glad that they're being very transparent. I'm also glad that they came out and explained exactly the extent of his injury, because I think there was a lot of, we'll call it a gray area there, because nobody knew exactly how bad it was. And I think them coming out and saying, you know, this is where we're at, this is what could happen, was good of them. Honestly, he didn't have to come out and say anything to anybody. So the fact that he is letting his fans in on his recovery process, I think is very telling of where he's at mentally. And I think it's amazing that he wants us to be a part of it.
I guess I could be the negative Nancy of the group just because maybe I'm just the idiot of the group. I don't know. But when back in, September or whatever, don't laugh, Mike. Back in September, when they announced the severity of his injuries and said spinal cord injury, like to me, that doesn't mean anything. So when you see some of his rehab where he's moving his legs, obviously I'm thinking, oh, that's great. That's awesome. And then they had to clarify, 2.5 months later, what exactly a spinal cord injury was. And so I guess the only beef I had is I wish they were a little more transparent earlier on as far as the extent of a spinal cord injury. And I know they don't really owe us that news because, they've done a good job of trying to keep everybody in the loop, even though it's at the end of the day, it's really none of our businesses. But to me, I just wish I knew what a spinal cord injury was a while back, because as soon as I saw him doing leg workouts, I thought, this is great. But then at the end of the day, they clarified that he's pretty far away from being 100%.
Yeah, that's fair. I can definitely understand that sentiment.
I'm just going to be that guy, I guess. But obviously, just like both of them said, that it's obviously we're still wishing the best for Robert. He's doing a great job, and I hope the rehab comes along here. And we, it would be so cool to see him back in a car someday. So do we have any other thoughts on that, or should we move on to our favorite/least favorite off-season topic, which is a McLaren?
Yeah, I think we can move on.
Well, Mark Miles, who also said, I don't know what he said a while back, he said McLaren to IndyCar is pretty much a done deal. Now he thinks that McLaren will be an IndyCar in 2020 with or without Alonso. Jess, are you ready for this topic to go away, or what do you think of Mark Miles' comments there?
Well, we all know that I am disappointed in Alonso not coming over, but my disappointment is on the Alonso part. As far as McLaren goes, yeah, okay, bring him over. I don't think McLaren was ever dependent on Alonso being their driver or vice versa. I think that everybody just kind of tied them together. So bring him in 2020 and let Alonso make his decision whenever he's ready to make his decision. But it would be nice to see another team. Like I've said the whole time, the more cars, the merrier.
Mike?
Yeah. I'm a little tired of, Fernando Alonso wants to try Formula E. Fernando Alonso wants to try NASCAR. Fernando Alonso wants to ride motorcycles. I don't want to hear about what he wants to try anymore. Just tell me when he's going to sign up for something, like when he's doing this ride swap with Jimmy Johnson. That's cool. But I don't want to hear about rumors until something official comes along, because so far, Fernando Alonso has expressed interest in almost every series that is remotely competitive. So until then, we can keep guessing, and Fred Watch is a lot of fun. Thanks for Willpower for that, Fred Watch graphic. We could probably update it to the lowest setting at this point, but I still think we see him for a couple races next year, maybe 3 or 4 at the most. But until then, I'm not going to, continue to guess on what's happening.
Yeah, now that you touch on that, isn't Alonso going to be racing in one of those McLaren Indy Lights entries that you mentioned a while back?
Yeah, and he's also going to do USF 2000 with...
That's excellent. That is excellent. We're breaking news here.
Yeah, yeah.
If you tweet that, we're going to laugh at you, so please don't. So speaking of that ride swap, for those who didn't see it, Jimmy Johnson and Fernando Alonso will be swapping rides at Bahrain, I believe, after the F1 right. season finale. And if you want any opinions on that, please feel free to look at Jenna Fryer's tweets. we can move on from that. Well, I don't know. Did you see Jenna's tweets? I know you're an avid follower.
I did not. What happened?
Is that sarcasm or are you being serious?
No, I'm being serious. I did not see what happened.
Well, I gotta pull it up now. It was something very here's a story about Jimmy Johnson and Fernando Alonso having a fake phone conversation about swapping rides in Bahrain. Just like the most, here it says, click here to watch Jimmy Johnson and Fernando Alonso fake talk on the phone to each other and plan a big party in Bahrain. And Jimmy replied something like, wow, you are so positive, Jenna. it's just the most Jenna Fryer thing to ever happen to social media was that tweet.
Hashtag disappointed. Hashtag disappointed Jenna.
Is that a thing?
It's about to be.
yeah, I don't know. I feel like that would have showed up. I know Jess like has Twitter notifications for Jenna or something.
I think she does. Yeah. Google.
Actually, what happens is she just automatically sends me a tweet to tell me she tweeted because I like him that much.
You're just that cool. Wow. All right. Now that we got the coolness of Jess figured out here, we can go on to another F1 related topic here, and that would be Marcus Ericsson, who I believe Mike caught it from somebody and tweeted that the night before the deal was announced that Marcus Ericsson was going to be driving for Schmidt Peterson Motorsports in the number 7 car, and then the next day it was confirmed by Schmidt Peterson Motorsports. So he will be driving, and Robert Wickens will return when applicable and to take that number 6 seat back for himself. So I don't know, Mike, you can lead us off here as far as thoughts on Marcus Ericsson to IndyCar being confirmed now.
Yeah. I'm happy for the guy. It sounds like he really wants to be here from everything we've seen in the media and from, the conference call that he held, I guess it was last week. It's tough to get a gauge on Marcus Ericsson because he's been in awful F1 equipment for the last 5 years. And I know awful F1 equipment every once in a while, gets lucky and gets some points, as evidenced by the 9 points he has this year and the 9 points he scored in 2015. And yes, I'm cheating. but if you go back to his Formula 3 days and GP2 and back even further to Formula BMW, the guy did win races, and he was consistent in those series for the most part. So I don't know if he's going to be, Robert Wickens level rookie talent or, I'm not picking him to win rookie of the year over Felix Rosenquist right now, but I think he's going to hold his own at least.
All right, Jess, I don't know how you're going to top that memory of Mike's, but do you got any other random facts to throw out about Marcus or any thoughts in general?
Not going to cheat because, he already threw out all the stats and that's really all we needed. I think it's good. I mean, like you said, everything that I've read, everything that I've seen, I didn't get to be on the conference call, unfortunately, but everything that I've seen is he's excited. He was really looking forward to working with Sam. So I think that's that's a positive because he's coming into it with a good mindset. He's not coming into it kind of, oh, woe is me. I have to go to IndyCar. So I'm hoping that he comes over and takes the opportunity to learn and throw up some good results. I think it'll be fun to watch him, honestly.
I'm just stoked for this rookie class. This rookie class looks stacked. I mean, once they inevitably announce our boy Santino Ferrucci into that seat. Then we got Ericsson, Rosenquist, and Pato, and Colton. That's a stacked class. And I think, it's easy for us to kind of say, at the end of the day, it looks like Rosenquist might be the favorite. But at the end of the day, like one of those five, like who's going to finish on the bottom? Like that's going to be tough to decide. And at the end of the day, I think it might come down to equipment. So I think it might be one of those Harding guys, which would be unfortunate, or maybe even Santino, depending on where that second coin car is at. But I'm like Jess said, it's good to hear him, I want to come to IndyCar, not the Alexander Rossi approach of this is just a pit stop for me to get back to Formula One, which obviously never did happen, but that's how he kind of came into it in 2016. So, good for him. I'll keep an open mind and hopefully he's here for years. That'd be pretty cool. So, next part of the news, which was another sad one that happened this week, was Fuzzy's Vodka, which to me is one of the most recognizable sponsors in IndyCar. If you go to a racetrack, you see Fuzzy's crap everywhere. They are unfortunately leaving Ed Carpenter Racing before the start of next season. So Ed Carpenter Racing is now looking for sponsors elsewhere. But Carpenter himself did come out and say that the team is not going anywhere. Pretty safe to say that us three are fans of alcohol on the show. I myself have never had Fuzzy's Vodka. So Jess, did it bring a little tear to your eye to see Fuzzy's going away?
Since I have more than I would like to admit
of
the Fuzzy's Vodka. yes, it does make me very sad. But I don't think they're going to end their partnership with IMS. Correct me if I'm wrong. I didn't see anything about that. So they are still going to be around racing, but just not with Ed Carpenter Racing.
Mike?
Yeah, of course it's sad. I have my Spencer Pigot signed Fuzzy's Vodka flask sitting on my desk next to me here. And obviously I picked Pigot's livery as the best livery of the year. So it's a double sadness, but.
Well, that was a fact. That's just a fact. So.
Yeah, right. Thank you. To Carpenter's point, you know, saying, hey, we're not going anywhere, leads me to believe that there's either something else already in the works, or, you know, I'm sure the Scuderia Corsa partnership might help a little bit, but I would imagine, you know, Fuzzy's, because they've been such a longtime sponsor, this wasn't a, you know, this wasn't a surprise to Ed Carpenter. So they've had time to, you know, find something else. And I wouldn't worry about them going away anytime soon with the connections he has. I'm sure he'll come up with a new sponsor for the start of the 2019 year.
Oh, but it's so sad, guys. Fuzzy's Vodka's gone. That's so sad. That's like my favorite car and just one of those sponsors where it's just, they seem like they got it. Like, you know, they just activated well. They put their merchandise everywhere. They put a banner everywhere. Just seemed like one of those brands that reminiscent of like the cart days where it just had like a cult following, like the Marlboro cars or the cool cars or, you know, what have you, the Tecate car. So yeah, it's just sad to see it go. I mean, like I always say, like Mad Men taught me, is the day you sign a sponsor is the day you start losing a sponsor. So every sponsor leaves at some point. It's always sad, but I guess at the end of the day, we just kind of got to move forward, and glad to see Carpenter Racing's not going anywhere. So that's good. Moving on. One interesting silly season facet that came out that's not necessarily going to be in play for this season, but possibly next season, is the fact that Vassar Sullivan Racing is slowly starting to recoup some of the stuff they lost after selling their team and doing an auction last offseason. They were formerly KVSH Racing, and now they lost the K. Kevin Kalkoven is sitting on an island somewhere, probably drinking, so I don't know where he's at, but they're starting to get their equipment back to hopes of fielding a team in 2020. But in the meantime, they actually were picked by Lexus as the new Lexus IMSA team for 2019, which is only positive news as they continue to kind of grow back to more than just being an associate team with Dale Coyne Racing for Bourdais entries. So I think it's Mike's turn here. Mike, do you have any thoughts on what we could potentially see in a resurgence with Jimmy Vassar and Sully Sullivan's team there?
Yeah, I think it's awesome. I'm not totally surprised because they jumped in, you know, with the coin entry this year, and you know they were bringing sponsorship to the table with that awesome Bourdais livery at the end of the year, and I think they helped with the Sealmaster, you know, sponsorship to some degree as well. So I'm not totally surprised, but anytime we can get somebody like the Vassar Sullivan combo, you know, back owning their own team in IndyCar means a couple more cars. So I think it's great. You know, I don't see any downside to it. And, you know, even if it takes a year in 2020 where maybe they run 10 races or something like that before they get full time, I think it's a good thing.
Jess?
Yeah, I definitely see them running a part-time schedule at first and then bumping it up to full-time. But I agree. Anything that'll bring more cars to the series is a positive. I don't really see a downfall to it at all.
And hopefully more Jimmy Vassar drinking way too much champagne at Victory Lane after a win, because those are always great. Before we move on to the next topic here, we'll toss it over to Mike real quick.
Yeah, thank you again to SoundCue Audio for sponsoring our episodes every week. SoundQAudio.com, and if you use promo code PLP fan, get 35% off your order, and we'll throw in a paddock pass for a race next year if you send me an email afterwards with your order number. And yeah, let's keep going on with the news.
All right, so let's put Jess on the spot here for a second. Jess, who are some of my quote-unquote favorite drivers? And when I say quote-unquote, I mean drivers I usually don't like. And I guess you don't like this driver either. Take a guess.
Yours?
Yeah, but I know you don't like this driver too. So name a driver that we both don't like.
Like a current driver?
Yep.
Marco?
Hey, look at that. I swear that was not premeditated. I swear.
That's the only one that we both don't like that's still currently driving, I think, is Marco.
The reason I put Jess on the spot, and well done for getting that correct, Jess. I wish we had a Pit Lane Parlay t-shirt to throw your way.
She's already got them.
I guess that's true. We'll we'll throw you a Marshall Pruitt t-shirt or something. I don't know. You can turn it into a towel or something. I don't know. You can do with it what you please. But anyways, Marco Andretti popped up in the news this week because he's actually now a partner on his number 98 entry, and it has some ridiculously long entrant name now, something like Andretti Autosport with Marco Andretti and Curb Agajanian Racing.com or something.
With Andretti, Andretti, Andretti.
Yeah, something along those lines. In all seriousness, Noah, it is cool that Michael came out and said that he was super proud of Marco to kind of step up and start taking an ownership role and start taking kind of looking after what his lifestyle / career is going to be like post-racing. Joking aside, I think this is also a way for Marco to make sure he doesn't get fired. But it kind of brings up an interesting point, which something that maybe I wanted to get into a deeper talk maybe on a rainy day some point, but you know, it's no secret that a lot of these IndyCar owners are starting to get up there in age, and it's kind of curious to see who these teams will get passed down to. So do you guys, we'll start with Jess on this one. Do you guys see Marco angling towards taking over Andretti Autosport when Michael either retires or passes, you know, hopefully in like 40 years, knock on wood, but do you see that happening?
No. not to be rude. No. Honestly, I kind of feel like this is just a sideshow kind of thing. I know that sounds terrible. And I could be totally off base here. I don't know what's going on in the background, but I just feel like this is more for making it look like Marco is wanting to be invested in this more. But I just don't get that feeling from him. Maybe it's due to the way he portrays himself through social media, you know, always wanting to hang out with all of his famous buddies and whatever. And it just never really seems like he's wanting to be on the serious side of things. So I could be totally wrong. Maybe this is just, you know, maybe I'm just reading it wrong, but I feel like maybe it's just being used to portray him in a better light to the racing community.
Mike?
All right. I'm going to go in the exact opposite direction of Jess and not just to debate her for debating her. But
no, come on, do it.
I could do that on anything. but yeah, it, you know, it's tough to say what it really means. It's, you know, it's probably too early to tell. Although it would be awesome if his friendship with somebody like Ludacris meant we saw Luda's face on the side of a car or something like that. That would be kind of cool. But in all seriousness, you know, if he's looking for, you know, towards his you know, post-racing career or, you know, potentially, you know, taking over for his dad one day, you know, now's a good time to kind of, you know, learn a little bit. I know he flew out to Indy for some engineering meetings the other day. So it sounds like he's already kind of, you know, getting a little bit of a head start on, you know, what owners and other guys do in the off season. So it's tough to say, but, you know, is it definitely possible that, you know, Marco could take over for his dad? I mean, sure. If he's, you know, if he's legitimately interested, like he's making it sound, then yeah, sure. But I obviously, you know, we don't really know what his exact thought process is.
Yeah, I guess I fall somewhere in the middle. Like, I can honestly see it. And they, you know, you ask anybody back in the early 2000s when Mike Landretti was thinking about starting a team, they're like, this guy's too cocky and headstrong to do anything in the IndyCar ownership arena. You know, now look at him. He's done so much as an IndyCar owner, and he finally got that Indy 500 win with Danny in 2005 that, you know, Michael could never get himself. So I see both sides of your guys' point. I fall somewhere in the middle. I could see it. Is he going to actually get pulled his whole weight behind it? I don't know. But Jess brings up a good point that he likes to hang out with a lot of famous people and has a lot of famous friends. But speaking of some of his famous friends, did you know that Danica Patrick was voted as the 50th most powerful person in the world of sports in 2008 by Bloomberg Business Week? I didn't know that. Did you guys know that?
I didn't know either. It's good to know facts. Nope. Like that.
Well, there you go. So that's one of Marco's famous friends is Danica Patrick. I hope her boyfriend continues to lose in football.
Yes. Patreon shout out to David Lighting, whose Packers really dropped the ball on Monday night.
I did not plan that, David. I'm sorry if Mike took a cheap shot there for you. Thankfully, we didn't have to watch the Eagles lose this last weekend because they weren't even playing. So that's a reprieve for everybody. But
touche.
We'll move on there to our next bit of news here. And it's one that we can kind of gloss over pretty quick is that Meyer Shank Racing, thankfully, has bought a second chassis that they will solely use just for the Indy 500 in 2019 with Jack Harvey. And so they'll shake that down in April, I think, during a test of some kind. The reason I say thankfully is because I think they have done poor the last couple of years there. Harvey was really only relevant there at the end when he stayed out but had to pit for fuel anyways. So it was kind of a, hey, look at me, I'm running up front, even though I'm not really up front kind of moment. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that. Hopefully this makes them more of a threat for this year's Indy 500.
Yeah, props to them for, you know, getting ahead of the game and doing something like this. And, you know, everything we've seen from Meyer Shank Racing, from, you know, Mr. Meyer coming on board, you know, to the XM sponsorship, to saying, listen, we want to do 10 races next year and then go full time and maybe add a second car. You know, they're saying the right things, but they're also backing it up with, you know, continued progress on the business end, which will hopefully lead to better results on the racetrack.
Jess?
I'm clapping my hands because, yay, they're doing what, you know, basically what they've said they were going to do. They're moving toward getting to where they need to be to actually field a car that, you know, it could be competitive by the time they get around to it. So, yay!
Yay! I think a really fascinating piece of news that came out this last couple weeks was that Surfers Paradise, which at first, the first part of the news was that they were looking at hosting NASCAR in the future, and they actually did have the Shell Penske NASCAR driving around the track, which has been modified for those who don't know. So it's not the old kart layout that we had. It's something new. I think it's not like shorter per se, but it's goes inwards more into the city more. It's not as long and narrow. So that was kind of like, oh gosh, you know, NASCAR is going to go back to Surfers, and here we are in IndyCar, just kind of watching from the sideline. But then the Premier of Queensland and the Minister of Trade, and I've been practicing this all week, Miss Anastasia Palaszczuk. Did I do that right? Does that sound right?
I hope, because I wasn't even going to try to pronounce that.
Okay. Anastasia Palaszczuk actually hosted Will Power, and they were just, I don't really know if Will Power is there as an IndyCar spokesperson. I'm sure she's been in contact with someone else, Mr. Stephen Starks, probably, about adding IndyCar to the schedule in 2020, which is fantastic. I'm so ready to get back to Surfers Paradise. It's one of those where if you put a race back there, the fans will show up for sure, no doubt. And they do run a very good V8 supercars race there. So, I think it's Jess's turn to go first. Jess, thoughts on possible IndyCar back to Surfers?
I'm going to dust off my passport for that. Yeah, no, that would be awesome. It would be, yeah, like you said, it'll bring the fans for sure if it happens. I think there are enough fans in that part of the world. And then obviously fans from over here who would be interested in going, because I would imagine that the race is going to be crazy good. So I would be all for it.
And real quick, is there a limit as to like, so like when your passport gets full of stamps, do you have to like get a new one?
I think so.
All right. So basically,
they actually do. They do give you a new one. It'll have all the same information, but it'll have new pages. Yes.
Because if I remember correctly, Jess's passport is going to be pretty darn full by we get to 2022. She's gone to Uruguay, Brazil, Argentina, Australia. I don't know. Is Oregon a foreign country? I don't know how that works. Almost. Sometimes I walk in there.
Well, it feels like it.
Yeah. Doesn't people say like Portland is super weird or something? It feels like you're not even in America at some points.
Yeah, keep it weird, Portland. That's their slogan.
I guess so. So anyways, Jess' passport's going to be pretty full by the time we get to like 2025. Mike, you got any thoughts on surfers?
Yeah, it's funny. When that first news came out, I guess it was the beginning of last week. But oh, that'd be cool. But it's just, you know, people talking behind the scenes. And then, you know, the premiere of Queensland came out and started talking. I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool. And then, you know, there were some TV news stations in Australia that started talking about it, and then that got me real excited. Then I thought, okay, there's more substance to this than, you know, some of the other rumors we've heard about, you know, whatever other place. So yeah, I think it's awesome. I myself would love to go there. That's quite a long flight, so I'm sure I'd have to use some vacation time, but I would take all the vacation time to go to a you know, a race like that.
I feel like if I have to say the premier's name, I feel like Mike should try it too.
Not a chance. I just know I'm going to butcher it.
Okay. I don't know if Jess wants to put on her earmuffs for this next news topic, but poor old Tony Stewart is now rethinking his IndyCar return. And one of the reasons for that is he is citing the Roberts Wickens crash as, you know, kind of reevaluating the dangers of IndyCar. And if he wants to do, the full comeback and come back to the high speed tracks like Texas and Indianapolis to put himself in danger when he's pretty much done everything in his career other than, you know, win Indianapolis. So Jess, pretty bummed, feeling sad, question mark.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's been around racing long enough to know the risks. I don't necessarily think that him saying he's reevaluating means he's totally like, nope, not gonna happen. So I'm kind of taking it with a grain of salt.
Mike?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a bummer to hear him or anybody say that, but I'm still hopeful that he will come back and do it. I think, you know, I'm sure maybe other current drivers talking to him going like, listen, you know, there's obviously risks, but you know, the car is pretty safe. And, you know, the fact that we can say Wickens is alive and has a chance at walking is, you know, should be, you know, proof of that. But it definitely is a little bit of a bummer.
Yeah. And I guess kind of what Jess said about him knowing the dangers. I mean, I feel like dirt racing has got to be one of the most dangerous forms of racing out there right now. I feel like, you know, I don't really want to quote an approximate figure, but it seems like, you know, we see in the news every now and then of a driver fatally injured in a dirt racing accident. And that's just sad. And, you know, I just feel like the dangers in that sport are pretty high. And Tony does that. I don't know how much he does it nowadays, but I feel like it's quite frequently. So, I mean, at the end of the day, from my couch, I can't really blame the guy, because who am I to say I would never do it? But drivers are usually wired differently and they accept those dangers. So that's where I just come from. I hope to see it happens. I do think, kind of like Jess said, he's kind of just reevaluating, which doesn't mean the end is near or that he's going to completely give up on it. But we'll just have to tune into that one. And so before we move on to the next topic, we'll toss it over to Mike here.
Yeah, just our Patreon shout outs for the week. Instead of doing something creative, since a few of you guys were busy, I'll just give everybody a quick shout out here. And although David Lighting made fun of the Packers, so I'm sorry, David. Thank you again, Colin Taylor, our buddy George, Matt Groenholz, Michael Goodyear, Mike Knapp, and who I believe, I guess, our newest follower, and then Stephen King, Stephen, not the author King. Yeah, thank you to everybody. It means a lot. If you guys want to check it out, go to patreon.com/pitlaneparlay, and you can read all about it. There's a special bonus clip from a conversation I had with somebody going up there tonight that'll be available to everybody in a couple weeks. So you get access to some cool stuff and extra content. Yeah, so let's continue on.
Before we do that, Steven pointed out something kind of funny on Twitter. I think Jess and I need to see a copy of Mike's birth certificate at some point because we're pretty sure it says on there, host Mike Jokum. Because if you guys ever notice, Mike starts out the episode
today.
Mike starts out the episode by saying, "My name is host Mike Jokum." And so Steven actually is like the one who pointed out to me. Now I think about it, like, oh, that is right. But now Mike can't stop because that's like so catchy and creative that it's like,
oh, I stopped. I don't know if you guys are going to have to tune into the beginning of the episode if you didn't realize it.
You didn't say my name's host Mike Jokum?
No, I have a sticky note on my computer to stop doing that.
No, you got to keep doing it. It's funny.
Oh, okay. That's fair. I'll delete that. I'll rip up that sticky note.
There's a reason I mentioned Danica once an episode, and that's because it's something we've been doing since the start.
That's true. I love your Danica facts.
They're so random.
Always catch you off guard. I do my best to kind of segue it in kind of seamlessly into a random news topic that we have. But moving on, we did just, for those who didn't listen to our last episode, we did have IndyCar's Jason Penix on for an interview. A big influence in the road to Indy. And I think it was actually kind of cool. We actually kind of sort of broke some news on the show. For those who didn't catch it, he said that in the episode that Dan Anderson would personally fund the scholarships in the short term for the drivers who won the F2000, the Pro Mazda, and the Indy Lights titles. And then like 3 days later, Indy Lights and IndyCar came out on social media and announced it. So we beat the punch by 3 days thanks to Jason. Yeah. So that was pretty cool. And then he said that in a perfect world, there'd be 18 Indy Lights entries with BM Racing has already been added. Hopefully Carlin, and then maybe on the back burner, Schmidt and Foyt. Kind of seems like it's quiet there. But did you guys have any general thoughts? We'll start with Mike about the interview and some of the tidbits he shared with us.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, thank you, Jason. If you happen to be listening to this, it was a great episode. And you know, special thanks to Dan Anderson to personally fund the scholarships, at least in the short term. You know, next year there's $2.2 million in scholarships available between Indy Lights, Pro Mazda, and USF 2000, which is pretty awesome. So, you know, 18 entries in Indy Lights to me is, you know, maybe a 2 or 3 year away goal, which I think Jason kind of alluded to. But yeah, if we could get to that 12, 13, 14 range this year, I think that would be a great step in the right direction.
Jess?
I want to say thank you again also. That was a great interview with him. I think it was fantastic that he gave us some insights. And yeah, keeping those scholarships going, obviously maybe only for the short term, but is, you know, I mean, that's the whole draw of it. And I think it's going to keep bringing the talent that we're seeing. And I think it's nothing but good things.
We'll move on to the IndyCar off-season tests. Going to touch on a lot of these super quick, and then we're going to kind of discuss one thing that we saw from one of the tests. So there was an Indy tire test. I know that was like 2.5 weeks ago, a while ago. So at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway with Scott Dixon, Alexander Rossi, Will Power, Graham Rahal, Ed Carpenter, and Tony Kanaan, who were testing some new tires and configurations. And they said that overall there were a lot of positive thoughts from the test about improved grip and handling, and they said the car was a little more predictable than it was in 2018 at the month of May, so that's good. Sounds like a lot of positives out of that one. Felix Rosenqvist and Scott Dixon turned laps at Barber. It was Rosenqvist's first laps in the new car. Team Penske with Simon Pagenaud, Joseph Newgarden, and Will Power were at Sebring, which is a great place to simulate street circuit conditions just because it's a rough track and very narrow. But the one I want to discuss was the Circuit of the Americas test, which included Alexander Rossi and Tony Kanaan. We had a fantastic video of Tony Kanaan with the visor cam that was released by IndyCar. But the big news that came out, well, not like maybe sort of big, but just kind of out of left field, was the fact that RC Enerson was there testing for Carlin, but it wasn't kind of widely broadcasted. A photo surfaced of a guy in a blue car in the number 31 Carlin Chevy, and I kind of speculate. I think that was Colin Taylor who shared that, and I kind of speculated it was Enerson based on the way his helmet looked. It looked like Enerson's helmet. And so that was kind of cloak and dagger. Not a whole lot was shared about that. I don't know if, Jess, you have any thoughts about the randomness of Enerson testing for Carlin at all.
It just carries on the season of odd. I don't have a problem with it. I don't know that it'll really amount to much, but who knows? I mean, you know, there's still a lot of time left in the off season, so it could end up being something.
Mike?
Yeah, it caught me off guard. You know, I've heard from a few people off the record, oh, Enerson's going to be back in 2019, but then you kind of haven't heard anything about him at all until he just shows up at this test in Texas. So, you know, good for RC. He was definitely impressive a couple of years ago when he was able to get in a couple races. And, you know, he is also partially sponsored by SoundCue Audio. So, you know, if they can get more exposure, it's good for us and good for them. So I hope to see it amount to at least a partial season.
So shout out to Colin Taylor for sharing that photo. That was really cool. Another, I wouldn't say this is sad. It's pretty, we'll say conflict oriented. How about that? And that would be Paul Tracy doing something stupid again on social media, which seems like it happens on a monthly basis. Mike's right. It's just dumb. The guy just needs to delete his social media. I'm sorry. I'm supposed to be delivering this in a neutral perspective. In other news, Paul Tracy is in hot water over comments he made on Facebook. Did I do that better?
That was good.
Okay. He is denying allegations, and I'm not even going to go into what he posted because it honestly is pretty offensive. It was calling a post on a Facebook profile that wasn't his, quote unquote, is what he is saying, even though there kind of are other accounts stating that it would be his, and the fact that he blocked the dude's wife that he was chirping at. He actually blocked his wife on social media, which you wouldn't do that if you didn't have something to hide. So Mike, from my non-neutral point of view now, do you have any thoughts on how poorly Paul Tracy runs his social media?
Very poorly. You know, I guess, you know, innocent until proven guilty, but the evidence is pretty bad, you know, from everything that racer.com and everybody else put together. I don't know if it's true or not, but if it's true, you know, he really needs to get like off of all social media to, you know, just delete everything. Somebody needs to block him from downloading social media again, because every time, you know, whether it's funny, whether he's trying to be funny or he's trying to be serious, he does a lot of stupid things, and that's, you know, not the image IndyCar wants to portray, I would imagine. So I have to think that they are pretty frustrated. Even if this ends up being a hoax, the fact that, you know, people are taking it seriously enough shows that, you know, Paul Tracy has said a lot of dumb things before. So I think it's time he needs to, at a minimum, delete all social media.
Well, and on a sidetrack there, it does sound like something he would post based on what he's posted, right?
Right.
Right. All right. Jess, any thoughts?
Can I hold mine until later in the episode?
Now, why would you do that? I'm so confused.
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm weird.
Oh, okay. Well, that really caught me out of left field. I have no idea what Jess is waiting for. Moving on, I actually want to jump into a Stump the Host, and I've already told these two that they're not going to get it right, but we're just going to do it anyways. And we'll leave you guys like a, we'll do some idle chit chat while you folks at home try to think of the answers. And if anybody gets all five of these, maybe like after I read the question, pause it, write them down. And if you like send them to me, I don't know if we can like send them a sticker or something, but because I'd be impressed if anybody got all five answers. All right. You guys ready?
As ready as I'm going to be.
All right. So Marcus Ericsson being announced means that we will have two Swedish drivers in IndyCar next year, which is just unheard of because we've actually only had five since I think about 1995 or so. And I want to know how many you guys can name. And I think there's pretty much only going to be two of the five that you're going to get. And I know Jess knows one.
Kenny Brack.
Yay. Who is also Jess's favorite driver, if anybody doesn't know.
Ever.
Who also has one of the best helmets of all time. So
yeah, there was something about that whole power team thing. Anyways, okay, so we have technically two then, because you've given us Erickson, right?
Oh.
Or did I just need to say it?
No. Like, so in the past, so Rosenquist and Erickson don't count.
Oh, they don't count. Okay, I'm with you. Darn. I'm sorry.
All right, so we've got Kenny Brack.
It's been a while since Jess and Mike have been on the same team, because now we get the Mike babbling special.
Stefan Johansson.
Hey, look at that. You guys got two. I thought that one would catch you off guard, but you got it. Mike, I don't have video on.
I didn't even hear it because I was laughing.
The only reason I thought of that one is because you, I saw you tweet at him the other day, I think it was.
Yeah, actually yesterday. It's a little weird that his Twitter account is Johansson F1 and it doesn't even mention the fact that he was an IndyCar, which he was pretty good at. But
yeah, thank you for tweeting that, because I did read it yesterday.
Yes, you're welcome.
Otherwise, I am going to admit defeat. And how about I do a quick shout out while we let you guys come up with the remaining choices? So, you know, again, thank you to Wildfire Radio. Check out the show Fridays, 3:15 to 4:15 Eastern, wildfireradio.com. And if you'd like to check it out on another radio network, Sky Network Radio, that's scynetworkradio.com. We'll be broadcasting the show every Sunday, 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. So keep your, you know, weekends busy in the off season. And, you know, they've got some other great shows on there. Actually, one of their shows is at the Food Championships this weekend. I don't know what the Food Championships is, but it sounds like something I think we all need to go to. And I think with that, we've given enough time for Matt to find out his answer.
Hold on. Is Dornbosch, is he Swedish?
Dutch.
Dutch. Nope. Okay, I've got no idea. Go ahead.
Good guess.
Yeah, well, it's not fair, because I think the other three have a combined like seven or so starts. One is everybody's favorite, Bjorn Werdheim. You guys ever heard of him?
Nope.
Nope.
He was a champ car driver. I think he raced like three races. One is Niklas Janssen. Again, probably never heard of him.
Who?
And the final was Fredrik Ekblom,
who did race.
Yeah, he did race. Why, Mr. Sarcasm guy? He did race for AJ Foyt and Walker Racing at some point back in the day. So, if you happen to have gotten all five of those, it sounds like something Colin Taylor would know. Just message Mike and he'll send you a sticker or a high five or something, because that's pretty impressive.
Send you a high five.
I don't know. I don't know how technology works nowadays. Sammy got this new iPhone and like you can send like memojis or something. Have you guys seen that?
Yeah, this newfangled technology is confusing even to me.
So I'm pretty sure you can, like, if Jess wanted to, she could send me a package and I open it up and be like her punching me for my useless Danica facts or something. I'm not sure how it works now.
I'm going to figure this one out.
Yeah, we'll get there. Real quick before we get to pitfalls, some things that we can kind of gloss over here. IndyCar announced that they're launching a new thing called IndyCar Media. And their hope is to secure more than 24 licenses representing more than 100 countries to broadcast the IndyCar series around the world. Doesn't sound like a negative thing. Hopefully it works out. Hopefully it's as good as it's being made out to be. IndyCar's third engine manufacturer update. Looks like they're trying to get a third one again by 2021, as we discussed with Jay Fry back in March and Jason last week. And then there was also a Racer magazine article that came out this couple weeks ago about it. And again, their one tidbit from that Racer article is their asking price for the manufacturer is about $8 to $10 million a year for over the course of five seasons, and that would include sponsorship activation within that price. So not only just getting the raw manufacturing of the engines, but getting a little more corporate exposure as well. Lilly Diabetes, who is everybody's least favorite sponsor in the entire world, is withdrawing from their NASCAR program with Roush Fenway Racing. It did specifically list Roush Fenway, so it's unclear if they're going to be in the sport at all, but given the brain trust over there, I'm guessing it's going to be a no. And finally, some positive news is that Charlie Kimball and his wife did welcome a newborn daughter. So congrats to them. Hope everything is well with the daughter and the mom. And the grid for the 2040 Indianapolis 500 just grew by one more entry. So it looks like that field of Sarah Fisher's daughter, the two Weldon boys, Elio's daughter, Hunter Ray's, was he have three sons? Yeah. Kanan's now got, what, four? Dixon's got two. So hypothetically, if they all end up in IndyCar, that's going to be a pretty full grid when we get to 2040. So I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on any of those four topics we just glossed over. We'll toss it to Mike if you'd like to start.
Yeah, the IndyCar media thing is great. I don't know how you can think anything negative about the fact that they are, you know, trying their hardest to, you know, secure a ton of international markets. That's obviously a good sign because I'm sure they've done their homework before, you know, forming this quote unquote company. The engine manufacturer thing is, you know, we've talked about that plenty. Lily Diabetes, shout out to Connor Daly for his Halloween costume, Lily Diabetes suit. I think it was Ryan Reed's, if I'm getting his name correct there. And congrats to Charlie.
Jess?
That was a whole lot. I'm impressed that you literally remembered every single thing you said.
He cheated. Yeah, he's on the
Yeah, I'm cheating.
Oh, well, I don't. Why don't I get to cheat? What is up?
Isn't your email Danica Patrick Fryer fan at 37@gmail.com? Because I shared this Google Doc with you.
Yes.
Can somebody make a Twitter account with that and put Jess's picture on?
Danica Fryer, 37.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, no. Let's not make a fake me. Right. Yeah, no, all good news. Congrats, Charlie. That's it.
All right. Do we have any more Patreon or sponsor shout outs before we move on to the pitfalls? Or
I think we are. Yeah, we're good to go.
All right. Well, again, we do thank you all so much for listening in with us, taking the time to allow us to share our passion with IndyCar. Again, follow us at Twitter, Pit Lane Parlay. It's P-A-R-L-E-Y for a lot of news updates. And then Mike does a really good job at the Instagram as well. Is that also just Pit Lane Parlay, Mike?
All of our social media is at Pit Lane Parlay, so you can't miss it.
We got all those domains locked down, so you can't miss us. So again, we do really appreciate you guys listening in with us. And with that, we'll move on to the pitfalls. And I'll go first. And mine's kind of a preemptive pitfall. And that's going to be to NASCAR, because what else is better than pitfalling NASCAR, even when you have nothing to pitfall them about? And that is their State of the Sport address is coming up next week. And I swear, if whoever trots out of the stage and doesn't say, we're in big trouble, they're going to be so full of you-know-what that I'm just going to sit there and probably throw my head into a concrete block. Because if they don't go up there and say that we're in trouble, our ratings are bad, no one cares about the playoffs, we just lost Fanatics, we just lost Lowe's, Monster's underpaying us, our CEO got busted for having opioids and alcohol in his system while driving a car in the Hamptons, I'm sure I'm missing three or four other crucial things that have gone negatively NASCAR's way this last year. They don't go out there and at least acknowledge the fact that their sport is in some kind of trouble. I don't really know what to say, and it's kind of par for the course for NASCAR. So if they don't go out there and acknowledge some fact that they're in trouble, they'll get my pitfall in 2.5 weeks or whatever. But that's what I'm assuming is going to happen, because everything's always kittens and rainbows in NASCAR.
Very well said.
I had that on my chest, if you guys can tell. I was building up for that for about an hour.
I just been chuckling because you said it's all kittens and rainbows, and there was literally a kitten in Rainbow Car one time. So,
yeah, Mike, you can go.
All right, continuing on the NASCAR train. NASCAR made Jimmy Johnson start in the rear of the field on Sunday's race at Texas for two failed pre-race inspections when it should have been three race. Failed inspection, pre-race failed inspections. So shame on whoever can't count. Two is not the same as three. Just some basic math lessons there. And apologizing after the race, to me, really does nothing, because even if I couldn't tell you where Jimmy Johnson finished the race, to be really honest with you, but even if he recovered and had a decent finish, you know, I just don't understand how at all that's remotely acceptable, and how, oh, hey, we're sorry, we're going to put some extra procedures in place so that doesn't happen again, is, you know, an answer that would appease people at all.
And to be fair, I mean, they probably get it, there's so many ticky-tack penalties every week that it's probably hard to keep track of every now and then. So they probably just like glossed over it. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, it kind of make like you're right. Apologizing after doesn't do anything for anybody.
Is the I have one more point there, and then I'll let Jess go. Jimmy Johnson's crew got a, you know, too many men over the wall penalty.
You're such a hockey fan.
I know. I don't know the wording of that one, so I'm going to use my hockey terms. You know, at least if you're going to try to make it even, just cancel out the penalty. Be like, listen, we screwed up before, so we're going to let this one slide now. But I guess that's probably not in the rules, and now you're bending the rules, and so maybe that's not such a good idea.
All right, and now to the most captivating of the pitfalls, because we have no idea what Jess is going to be talking about. We will toss it over to Jess.
Yes. So for my pitfall, it's not NASCAR. Hey, bucking the trend here. Bucking the trend. I'm going to pitfall Paul Tracy. We all know how much I love Paul Tracy to begin with. And I can't say that it was this specific time that makes me want to pitfall him, but he's had a really poor year in general. And I'm not talking just about on his social media. I'm talking, that's where we see him at. So it is all, he posts it all on his social media, but he also has just not been, you know, a very good asset for IndyCar for a while. You know, I know some people loved him when he was driving, but I don't really know very many people who love him anymore. Just because he does these outlandish, crazy posts on his social media, not just where he's saying things he shouldn't be, but, you know, where he's driving 120 miles an hour, driving and taking a video of it and then posting it on social media. So, okay, so that's kind of worse than texting while driving, but whatever. You know, you would think that somebody in his position would use his position to promote things like safety, and to just be a decent human being. And obviously right now, you all can go online and find what he posted. I'm not gonna say it because it is extremely offensive. And yes, I do believe that he said it himself. I have no reason to think otherwise, because he said a lot of other really stupid things recently in social media. So I'm just going to leave it at Paul Tracy is just my pitfall in general right now.
I don't think either Matt and I are going to argue that one.
Well, the only thing I got to say is you're telling me that him driving 120 miles an hour and posting far right views doesn't impress you?
No.
Wow. Well, that's super weird. Who would have thunk that was not impressive? I don't know. Maybe someone should remind him that it's not impressive. It's just annoying. Like, just stop, Paul. Just delete your social media. Go back to NBC. Talk about how bad Townsend Bell was at that one bar at that one point during the middle of a race broadcast when they're fighting for the lead. And we'll just leave it at that.
We need to get him talking with Parker Thompson and Parker's don't text and drive campaign that he has going on.
Who's got the don't be an idiot and tweet campaign?
Oh, there should be a lot of those.
Yeah.
But on that note, thank you everybody again for tuning in this week. And with that, Jess, feel free to end the episode.
Was done by Impulse Studios and produced by Podcastly Productions. Web design courtesy of A30.com.